Well, our next interview will, I suspect, appeal deeply to many of you. It's, as did the book on which it draws, appeal to me. David Friedman is co-author with Eric Abrahamson of a book called A Perfect Mess: The Hidden Benefits of Disorder, How Crammed Closets, Cluttered Offices and On-the-Fly Planning Make the World a Better Place. The authors claim that moderately disorganised people, institutions and systems frequently turn out to be more efficient, resilient, creative and in general more effective than highly organised ones. David, welcome to Counterpoint.
Thanks very much.
Now, the conventional view of mess, of course, is that it's a terrible thing, but you actually did a survey for the book about attitudes to mess. Can you tell us a bit about what you found?
Sure. We found out that about two-thirds of people are messy, and virtually all of them feel ashamed of it, guilty about it, and utterly convinced that if they were neater, if they were more organized, that they would be more effective.
That's an interesting outcome, isn't it? Did it surprise you?
Not really. I certainly had spoken with a lot of people before it got to the point of the survey, and it was really some time ago that I became aware of and shocked by the fact that a lot of people think about mess. A lot of people are really upset about their own self-perception of not doing well enough, of continually resolving to try to be neater and never being able to do it, and in general just feeling that their lives were a horrible mess because they're not organized enough.
Why do you think people feel like that?
Now, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think the best answer is, I don't know, but I have a couple of really good guesses. One is, I like to talk about the book, The Cat in the Hat, which so many children are read at a very early age, hundreds of times, which is basically a book about two young children left at home who end up with a big mess, and they're terrified their mom will come home, discover the mess, and not love them anymore. And luckily, a bunch of professional organizing cats come in and straighten it all out and save the day. We hear messages like that almost from the day we're born. We hear it from our parents, our teachers. Later on, we hear it in the workplace and from our colleagues, always from our family, and it just gets driven into our head. And now, of course, you turn on the TV, you open the magazine, and here are these beautiful offices and homes that are absolutely pristine, almost sterilely so, and so we can't help but think, well, that's the way we're supposed to be.
I think The Cat in the Hat came out in the 50s, and I guess the fear of mess could be a modern phenomenon, couldn't it, in the sense that we just have much more stuff to keep control of now because we're so much more prosperous?
Well, I think you're right. You know, you can trace back this obsession with order back a couple of centuries. But really what happened, I think, is those of us that grew up in the 50s, 60s, even up into the 70s, typically grew up with a stay-at-home mom who kept the house really neat. Jobs were very linear. They were relatively simple. And so we had this perception of this is the way things were supposed to be. And as we got into the 90s, and you have the mother and father working, and you have jobs that are becoming much more non-linear, much more complex, and the day of multitasking, we look around and we feel something's wrong. This isn't the way it's supposed to be.
What's your take on the cost-benefit analysis of actually getting organized and doing something about mess?
We do an awful job in general at trying to account for messiness and neatness. What we do is we grossly exaggerate the benefits of being organized. We just assume that if you're more organized, you'll be better off. We're utterly oblivious to the disadvantages of being organized, and it doesn't even occur to us there could be advantages to being messy. So for one thing, people who are really neat will typically spend between the home and the office anywhere from 1 to 4 hours a day straightening up. Now, this is time that relatively messy people can put into their jobs, into their children, their families, their hobbies, into whatever they want. And I think that's a lot of time. So right off the bat, you have this huge discrepancy in the way we account for neatness.
That's a very interesting figure about the amount of time that neat people spend keeping their lives neat, because far more common is this other figure we hear, and I don't know if it's true, that messy people or average people spend an hour a day looking for things.
Well, we ask that in the survey, and we ask people how long they spent looking for things at home in the office. The average turned out to be 9 minutes, and that turned out to be an average for all people. Now, it turned out there was only one group of people that actually spent a lot more time than that looking for things, and that was really neat people. Messy people were on the low end of how much time they spent looking for things. So this idea of people spending an hour a day or more looking for stuff is an utter urban myth.
You've got a lovely quote from Albert Einstein, if a cluttered desk is a sign of a cluttered mind, of what then is an empty desk?
Albert Einstein was an incredibly messy person, and this is well documented. Almost any photograph of him shows himself surrounded in stupendous mess. And it turns out that in general, more responsible people are, the higher the position they have, the higher their salary, the more experience they have, the messier they are.
Is that right?
Yes, yeah, that's actually was shown in a survey not done by us, but by another company.
Another interesting thing you throw up in the book is, I mean, one would think that science would have to be the preserve of order and everything, and I know often in a laboratory it is, but there are some standout examples of where mess has actually helped the scientific process, hasn't it?
This book actually stemmed from the whole idea that scientists have discovered that mess is useful. The way the whole thing started was back in 93, I stumbled on a physicist in St. Louis here who had studied the way that adding disorder to certain kinds of physical systems, like electronic circuits or chemical reactions, can actually make them work better. And it seemed sort of a freak thing, but it turned out that this field exploded throughout the 90s, and scientists found that almost anywhere they looked in the universe, any system they looked at, they could find examples of where adding disorder made the system work better. And one of the systems where this turned out to be most true was the human brain. Anywhere you stick a probe into the human brain, you find random signals or noise. And if you take those signals away, the brain doesn't work well. So I asked the question, well, gee, if it works everywhere we look in nature, including the human brain, shouldn't this be true of organizations? Shouldn't this be true of us in our daily lives? And that's really how the project got rolling.
Yeah, let's talk a bit more about organizations. I, many years ago, used to be a management consultant in government. And typically, we would go into an organization and look at its structure and then model it on a whiteboard or something. And of course, it was very easy to prove that it was messy and disorganized. And we would come up with an alternative that was much better. Except I started to realize after a year of doing this that at the end of the day, our model was actually no better than what had gone before. And the process of transformation was incredibly damaging to the organization. But it's true, isn't it? There is now an entire industry in the private and public sector trying to impose order on organizations, often probably for no good reason.
Well, that's right. Here in the United States, something like $45 billion a year are actually spent on consultants of one sort or another. And the higher level a consultant, the more essentially they want to impose some sort of order on a company. And typically when a company doesn't do well, I mean, what people say is, well, we're not ordered in the right way. We have to reorganize. We have to re-engineer our processes so we have a different recipe for doing things. And in fact, what's almost never considered is the possibility, not that you don't have enough organization or that you have the wrong organization, but that you have too much organization, that you're actually trying too hard to figure out what is the right way of doing things and what exactly do I want to tell my people to do, and what should everybody's position be, and what do we want to do over the next 5 years to make everything work. And there's a lot of evidence to show that all those efforts do not pay off. And there's a lot of anecdotal evidence to suggest that, in fact, companies who do less of that do better.
And talking of the industry, there's also an industry that seeks to impose order in personal life, in private life, isn't there? And that's probably the industry that uses that one-hour figure we spoke of earlier to make people feel guilty and in need of their services.
This is an organization, an industry that has sprung out of nowhere in the 90s and is just becoming bigger practically by the day. If you want to measure it by here in the United States, the number of TV shows that are dedicated to nothing but showing how these professional organizers save people's lives by organizing their horrible, horrible, messy homes and lives, then you'd have to judge that these people are becoming the new heroes of our society. And there's a sense that these people can really cure what's wrong in our lives. And it's a terribly, terribly misguided notion. I mean, if somebody has a lot of money and they want to hire someone to come in and straighten up for them, I say, fine. I mean, hire someone to drive you around, to cook your food, take care of your kids, and straighten you up if you want. But the idea that we need to do this and that there's something wrong with those of us who let our houses get a little messy, I think is terribly misguided and very damaging.
Just a note here for our listeners, Dave. You're listening to Counterpoint on ABC Radio National, where our guest is David H. Friedman, who's talking to us about a fascinating book that he's co-authored. It's called A Perfect Mess, The Hidden Benefits of Disorder. Do you think it's possible one of the reasons for this enthusiasm for order is that more and more people now have been to university or college and where they study theories. I mean, I suppose the whole process of acquiring a university education often involves trying to impose order, trying to understand systems, thinking of what's a good system compared to a bad one. I mean, are we starting to over-intellectualize our lives?
That's a really interesting question, and I think there is a tendency towards doing that. And when we try to over-intellectualize, it's almost never in the end of questioning whether or not order is good. I mean, over-intellectualizing almost always tends towards imposing more structure, trying to figure more things out, coming up with more rules. And so there definitely is that problem. I would actually point, though, to very early education as the bigger culprit here in sort of preparing us for being sort of incompetent through over-organization. Because typically what you see, even in preschools, I mean, even before kids go to elementary school, before kindergarten, you find a lot of programs where they really emphasize discipline and having the kids behave a certain way and learn a certain way. And you're not supposed to take this toy out of this section, and don't play with two toys at once. First play with one, and when you're done with it, put it away, and then you can play with the second toy. This is the enemy of child development. Children should play in a very, very messy way. They should think in a messy way. And that's really how the human brain was meant to develop, in a fairly messy environment. And when we try to impose a very ordered environment in education, we are training our children essentially for incompetence.
And training them, I suppose, not to cope well with disorder. Now, your theory of mess, how does it relate to other theories that at least superficially might seem related? For example, chaos theory, complexity theory, that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I don't want to be too glib about it, but there really is very little overlap. There's some technical overlap. Chaos theory is terribly misnamed. The technical meaning of chaos actually has to do with systems that in fact are ordered, but the order isn't apparent. It's hidden order. Or it can be very ordered systems that over time become unpredictable. It's not about random systems. And in fact, the first thing chaos theorists do when they're looking at a system is first they make sure that in fact it's not random. It's not a messy system. Because if it is, they're not that interested in it. They want systems that actually have an underlying order to it. So it really is a very, very different thing. And the same is true of complexity theory. Again, these are systems that tend to be ordered. They're not random systems. So they're really quite different.
Your mess is real mess.
Exactly. Yeah, we all know what mess is. You don't need you can give an actual technical definition of mess, but in fact, intuitively, we all know what disorder is.
I'm interested in the sort of response your book has had, because I know it's been published pretty widely around the world. Now, your co-author is Eric Abrahamson, who I believe is the youngest ever full professor of management at Columbia University School of Business.
Yeah.
Do you have any sense of how his colleagues, his profession, has responded to this idea that in business a little mess isn't a bad thing?
Well, he's gotten a good response from his colleagues. And in general, the response has been, I'd say, 90% favorable, maybe more than that. And the pushback from it, the people who have not responded well to it, for the most part, I mean, most loudly, are, of course, the professional organizers. And, I don't blame them. I mean, they feel we're sort of cutting into a good thing they've got going, and we're messing with their livelihood. So I can understand why they're upset about it. And other than that, what we hear sometimes from people who are extremely neat is, I mean, these are people who just absolutely have it driven into their heads that this is the way they have to be. They've been held up as sort of the role model of society, and they're not really eager to give up that position. And so I guess I can understand why they'd be upset too. But the vast majority of people actually seem to react with anywhere from relief to a lot of interest in the book.
I read it with a great sense of relief. Look, one final question, Dave. Not quite about mess, but it certainly stems from your book. I believe you're also in favor of procrastination.
Well, absolutely, yes. I mean, what you're doing when you procrastinate is you're prioritizing. I mean, you're essentially saying, this is something I don't want to do right now. I'm going to do other things instead. And typically what happens is the things we are most worried about and have this sense that, gee, we better not put this off, those things often take care of themselves. A huge percentage of problems that you put off are very, very safely put off. Very few of us run into big problems by procrastinating. And what we find out is when we come back to do some of those things we put off, either we don't have to do them anymore, which is great, or else what we have to do with them has changed. So one example I'd like to give is the United States Marines. I mean, they're known as a very effective fighting force. They procrastinate when it comes to planning as much as they can because they know the situation is very dynamic that they're going to be facing, and if they can plan at the last minute, then their plans will be that much better. And I think that's something we can all learn from.
There was an Australian Prime Minister, and I'm not sure if he stole this story from someone abroad, but he said whenever he had an urgent memo, he'd stick it in a drawer and he'd take it out once a week, and every successive week he took it out, he found it was less and less urgent.
Yes, I like that story. Yeah, I've heard similar stories, not that particular one. But yes, I think in general, when you think about it, that turns out to be true. Because we all procrastinate. Almost all of us do. We all feel terrible about it. It gives us a very anxious feeling. And yet the fact of the matter is, how many of us really run into big trouble because of it? I hear very few stories along those lines.
Dave, this has all been incredibly liberating. Thanks for joining us.
A pleasure. Thanks for having me.
David Freeman is co-author of A Perfect Mess, which is published by Little Brown.
And that's it for us this week. Counterpoint is produced by Ian Coombe. Our sound engineer is John Diamond, assisted today by Murray. And I'm Paul Comrie-Thompson.
I'm Michael Duffy, and coming up in just a moment, Radio National, the ABC News.